Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, from India to Latin America, how the Vatican's Council for Social Communications is helping churches to embrace the challenges of the digital culture. And ahead of the UN's World Food Day, we find out how rising costs in some countries can mean the difference between life and death in others. New technologies, new languages, new friendships, new ways of being together in a kind of virtual communion. The possibilities and opportunities that the digital culture can provide for the church are almost endless. Pope Benedict has elaborated on many of them in his annual messages for World Communications Day. And this year he's chosen a reflection on the value of silence as an important part of the process of communication. But just how is the church in different parts of the world responding to the huge challenges of the digital era? What are the most common problems faced by church leaders or young laypeople as they integrate these ever-changing technologies into the age-old task of spreading the gospel to the ends of the earth? Well, here in the Vatican, the Pontifical Council for Social Communications is at the cutting edge of this vital question, offering practical support and theological reflection for church leaders tackling the issue in their own local context. Archbishop Claudio Celi, president of that council, heads off to Chile next Monday for a three-day conference on just this theme, New Horizons for the Church in the Digital Culture. He told me more about the meeting, which will include bishops and media experts from right across Latin America.
I think that is an important moment. Already it happens that we are talking about digital culture since already many years, and the Holy Father is inviting us to play a major role and to have a pastoral approach also to such a problem. And so we thought that was good, after the Aparecida meeting of the Latin American bishops, to rediscover the mission of the Church in dialogue with the digital culture. And so in Santiago de Chile, we are having all the people responsible of the communication field in all the local churches in Latin America, from Mexico to Brazil. And it will be a moment to meditate and to perceive what is the duty, the task of the church now in this field, in its permanent dialogue with this digital culture. And certainly, as you know, in Aparecida, the Latin American bishops were defining some perspectives of the pastoral activity of the church. And certainly, communication is playing a major role in the evangelizing mission of the church. And so I think that on the perspective of these documents of Aparecida, the church has to question herself, what is our duty today and how to live such a mission in the Latin American context. And I think that it will be a relevant moment to meditate together and to see what we can define as pastoral goals in the field of communication. One of the activities that we are now promoting is the Episcopal Net. It means that we are taking advantage of new technologies to improve the ecclesial communion among the bishops. And so, through such a net, bishops can talk each other, I would say, freely, in a very protected way. They can have video conferences. And they have a lot of possibilities. As you can imagine, for us, it's not only a communicative net, but is a communal net. In the church, all technologies are facilitating, are promoting ecclesial communion, because this is the main goal of the church, communion.
And this is particularly useful, particularly significant in a continent like Latin America, where distances are so huge.
I tell you honestly, I was talking recently with some bishops from Latin America, and I remember a Brazilian bishop who was telling me, every evening through Skype, I am talking with my priests scattered in a very wide territory of the diocese. You see, when you have a priest in a parish, but to meet another priest is needing a day-long journey, and it's impossible so to meet frequently the bishop. Now is nice because new technologies are offering such a bishop the possibility to talk with his priests every evening. So it is a human enrichment, but also really is a moment of ecclesial communion.
Monsignor Claudio Celi, President of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. Meanwhile, the secretary of that same council, Monsignor Paul Tai, has just returned from a visit to India, where he attended a seminar on the role of new media and communications in seminary formation. The four-day meeting in Calcutta, which included talks as well as practical training sessions, began with a mass at the tomb of Blessed Mother Teresa of Calcutta, an unlikely yet appropriate icon for the world of communications, as Monsignor Tai explains.
That was fascinating because it was on the feast day of St. Francis of Assisi. And as I was waiting to go and celebrate Mass, I was brought to the parlour where Mother Teresa would have met visitors. And there was the prayer of St. Francis, make me an instrument of your peace. So obviously there was this clear thing. But then as I was trying to reflect on it with the people who were there, it kind of struck me all sorts of important symmetries. But one maybe strange coincidence is St. Francis is synonymous with Assisi. Mother Teresa is synonymous with Calcutta. Two more different cities or towns you cannot imagine. You go to Assisi, I go and I bring friends, and I bring some of my more cynical Irish friends, and they never fail to be touched. There's something about the beauty of the place and the silence and the peace of the place that touches even the more cynical Irish hearts and speaks of God to them. Then you have Mother Teresa in a city that is hot, noisy, smelly, overpopulated, poor in a very rough way, and she could find God and God's beauty in some of the most difficult circumstances. So I found myself reflecting on the, you know, we sometimes romanticize St. Francis, and the truth is there was a difficult dimension to his life, there was a struggle, there was the stigmata, but we see the beauty very often first. Here was somebody, Mother Teresa, while appreciating fully clearly in the use of this prayer her appreciation of St. Francis, but her ability to find God in far less fertile circumstances. And for me, it was just a reminder that God is always there to be found, and God is always there to bless us through his presence in different situations. And then again, particularly in a context when you're talking about communications, I mean, Mother Teresa of Calcutta is somebody who communicated the church maybe more powerfully than many other people, not by words, but by the way she lived her life. Sometimes the simplicity of her own words also was very powerful, her impact. You know, one of these icons, and maybe we have to appreciate precisely Mother Teresa as a model for the communicator.
Can you tell us about the goals of this meeting in India?
It involved a gathering of seminarians from different seminaries around India, exploring the role of formation in pastoral communications in the life of a seminary, in the preparation of future priests and various pastoral leaders. This follows up on an initiative launched about 2 years ago by Archbishop Celi, which is that the Indian Bishops' Conference have prepared a series of three books, textbooks that take students and seminarians through the issues of communication, so ensuring that there's a kind of a clear place for communications within the seminary curriculum. And this seminar, this convention, was really a chance to meet with the students and to talk with them about how they see the importance of communications in their preparation for future ministry. So a little bit it focused on the particular curriculum, how they developed the skills and the capacities, particularly to use the new technologies and, more importantly, the new social media platforms that are existing in order to be effective communicators of the gospel and of the reality of the life of the church. But also it led to a very interesting discussion about the role of the internet and new media in the life of the seminary, or as I found myself saying, it's not so much about the place of the internet in the life of the seminary, it's about the place of the seminary in a digital world, because it's hugely changing all the dimensions of how we learn, how we communicate, how we think, how we reflect, and therefore I think it has a particular challenge also for those who are involved in seminaries. And the challenge is double, because very often the students will be much more expert in the actual use of the technologies and more familiar with those technologies and by maybe extension more inserted in the digital culture than their superiors. And we propose that part of that means that the model has to be very much a dialogical one. I mean, those of us who are a bit older have certain appreciations of what communications is about. And that is not just about technology, and it's not just about the volume of communications. So a lot of the discussion was around those issues. So questions about how much access should people have to the internet, how much time, what are the risks of getting kind of distracted. So in many ways, we were probably rehearsing also some of the issues that we hope to explore. We're looking forward to hearing the Pope's message for next year, which will be talking about the role of silence and silence and the word. Silence has always been essential to communications. We can't listen without a certain degree of silence. We punctuate our words with silence, so silence is integral to communication. So in a digital environment, it's also silence is there as the place where we integrate all the information we're getting. And as we become more and more overloaded with information, with stimulus, with facts, with comments, one of the things we need to do is be able to step aside and ensure that we're processing, we're filtering it, we're judging it, and that we're in charge of the process. And these are the skills that the students wanted to talk about. And again, equally a very interesting thing emerged is, you know, silence doesn't have to happen offline. There are kind of mediated silences that can happen through the use of the new technologies, and some of the students were reflecting on how there are tremendously valuable assets available, such as guided reflections on meditation of the Gospels, with stimulus, with ideas, with images, with music. And so it was a very interesting seminar. It was also, for me, a way of confronting the reality of the life of the church in India. At one level, we're very conscious of India as a very privileged place in the forefront of the digital revolution and the extraordinary communication. At another time, that's side by side with such absolute poverty. I came across a wonderful description by the author Arundhati Roy, who said, "I'm sitting here at my computer. I have the most up-to-date broadband you can have. I have the advantage of a fiber optic cable. And outside, that cable has been laid by hand by 30 workers who are working by hand without any facility." So you have this extraordinary juxtapositioning of the most cutting-edge technologies hand by hand, side by side with extraordinary poverty. And I think one of the things that we came very strongly was the importance that we ensure whatever strategy we have for communications, as we will want to depend more and more on digital media, that we have to be attentive to inclusiveness, that we don't inadvertently exclude those who are already excluded.
This challenge of the digital divide that you're talking about is perhaps more evident in India than almost anywhere else in the world. What kind of solutions, though, are you offering? How do you try and ensure that people are not excluded in this way in the digital world?
Yeah, we can't offer technical solutions, but they are emerging, thankfully, because as more and more people are moving to smartphones, and smartphones are becoming cheaper and cheaper, and therefore more accessible to a larger section of the community. And the key issue is they're not probably the straight up cost, but it's the package you need to get the data. And those are becoming more reasonable. One of the things that quite impressed me too was the number of places around the cities where there was free Wi-Fi available, for example. So it opens up those possibilities. But for us, it's about a mentality. It's not about a technical. It's about ensuring that, say, even within a community, we might take somebody who has access to the information, that then they have to make that information available to those who are not online. I mean, I think it's not just exclusively to India, it's across the church, particularly if we reflect honestly. As a church community, very often we have a disproportionate number of older people. And older people often have been that little bit slower to engage with new technologies. So one of the things, even in the first world, I think we have to be very attentive, is there's the temptation to say, well, all the information's on the website. But that's not necessarily going to be available to all our traditional constituency. So I would say one thing is about the technology that is moving on and is helping to render access less costly and more available. The other thing then is, of course, we have to be much more attentive to the other, maybe the soft barriers, like a disinclination to use, lack of literacy, which has always been a problem, but which can become a multiplied problem in this context. So it's about keeping an attentiveness in all we're doing to say, OK, this is faster, it's quicker, it's more economic, but is it actually reaching? And it's just developing awareness and a consciousness and then compensating through human communication for where the digital becomes difficult. One area where that focused on was the area of friendship. It's very easy to make friends online. It's very easy to end friendships online. But most of us know that one of the greatest blessings you can have in your life is a good human friendship. But most of those friendships are friendships that took a lot of time, that required particular types of intimacy at times and giving it time. Also, many of our best friendships are friendships that where we're willing to risk truth-telling, challenging one another. There are friendships often at times where there's been an element of sacrifice because we've stuck with a friendship when it mightn't have been so easy. And that wisdom wouldn't want to be lost in an environment where maybe the emphasis is more on the quantity rather than the quality of the friendship, and where the actual human engagement, if I'm face-to-face with somebody, there's something there that corrects any tendencies I have. If it's at a distance, it may be a bit easier. So it's about sharing, while appreciating the extraordinary potential the new communications have for allowing us to continue friendships that in the past would have been lost because we're at a distance, you don't see the person. At the same time, becoming aware of some of the downside. And the way we tried to character the discussion in Ideally in a Seminary is it's kind of an intergenerational dialogue. And one of the things we would say to seminary superiors is, OK, you have to have rules about use, but explain them. Don't just impose them. Explain them, because these are active students. And one of the documents we focused on was that famous document on seminary formation, Pastoris Darbo Vovis, where there's a very strong passage there where it says the key thing you have to give students is that freedom, that they are mature enough to be able to use things, see the value in them, integrate them into their own lives, and take responsible decisions. So one of the things we found ourselves saying, that the question of internet usage or engagement with social media is not just a question for the external forum, meaning it's not just a question of the rules of the seminary. When is it on? When is the Wi-Fi off? Who can you talk to? Who can you not? But it's actually one for the internal forum, for the individual candidate's discussion with his spiritual director to say, is this helping me to grow as a person? Is this making me a better, more available, a person who's more available for service? Or could it be something that's actually distracting me from core personal responsibilities?
My thanks there to Monsignor Paul Tai, Secretary of the Pontifical Council for Social Communications. Food prices in crisis. That's the focus of this year's World Food Day observance, marked annually on October the 16th under the auspices of the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, based here in Rome. While we in the West moan about the rising costs of a loaf of bread, a pint of milk or a pound of meat, for a poor family living on the edge of starvation in the developing world, rising food prices can mean, literally, the difference between life and death. That's the stark warning contained in a new report from CIDSE, the Brussels-based alliance of Catholic development agencies working for global justice. The report is published ahead of World Food Day and an upcoming food summit here in Rome next week. With around 1 billion people still going hungry, while about a third of our global food production is wasted or thrown away, Sidse says it's high time to rethink the whole pricing, trading and distribution system to combat this crisis and create food security for all. Bernd Nilles is Sidse's Secretary General.
From my point of view, the time has come to fundamentally rethink the global food system and also to create coherence in global food policies. Because we are facing fundamental threats to poor farming families and people today facing hunger. And this is not just an emergency situation. This is now, after observing the situation for so many years, Sidse comes to the conclusion that there is something fundamentally wrong with the whole system. For example, we see a major threat to local food markets by the integration into global food markets to expose local markets to the global market without protecting them, for example, is a major danger.
So what are the most important changes that you're calling for? What kind of steps would you like to see taken in the short term?
It is crucial to looking at the changes we are aiming for. First, we need to acknowledge who are the people suffering and why, and what's the difference, for example, to us here living in the north. In the south, in developing countries, people spend up to 80% of their income for food, while in Europe, for example, it's somehow about only 20%. So when the food price is changing, also we in the north, we complain about it, but in fact for people and families in the south, this is can come to a kind of a death sentence, can bring them into a very, very serious situation. So the food price issue is very important. In the last years, particularly due to the financial crisis, and the financial market liberalization, we have seen a lot of speculation on with food. And by this, the food prices have, on the one hand side, they have increased. And as I said, this is a major danger for people, for consumers. Secondly, we have seen a lot of food price volatility. That means food prices go in a relatively short time, they go up and down. And that is a major threat to farmers who don't know how much money they might get for the harvest and if they are able to feed their families later on. So we need, from our point of view, to address food price speculation. For example, speculation with wheat, speculation with corn needs to be completely excluded from the financial markets, from speculation at stock exchanges, like in Chicago, for example. Secondly, because of high food prices, companies, business people, financial market people have a higher interest in food commodities, and they have a higher interest in buying land. So there's a lot of speculation on land also today. So we need to stop this so-called land grabbing. We need to agree this and next week in Rome when the FAO and the Committee on Food Security meet. We hope that they're going to agree on land guidelines which protect farmers from losing their land.
Do you think this is likely? Are you optimistic that there will be some agreement around this? Because, as you say, there's a lot of speculation, there's a lot of money involved in this.
You're right. There's a lot of money involved in it. And as long as we let the market forces play, of course, nothing will happen. But these days, due to the major impacts of the financial crisis and the ongoing economic and financial crisis, heads of state today are quite busy in changing actually the frameworks for financial markets, to create frameworks to limit speculation. There is this discussion on creating a financial transaction tax to lower the negative impacts of speculation and harmful speculation itself. There will be new rules for financial markets, and we have commissioned a study with help of one of the major players at the German stock exchange And he, for example, and his research institute confirmed very clearly that it is possible to change the situation. It's just a question of political will. And in Rome, I think it's very important that we have today this Committee on Food Security, which has a strong mandate to create more coherence. So it cannot be that we have, on the one hand side, food aid for East Africa, for an emergent situation, without addressing the root causes of the problem, why people are facing hunger.
As you say, it is largely a question of political will. These are important economic issues, but these are important moral issues too. In this sense, what else can the churches do? What else can ordinary people do to try and have an impact on this situation?
I met a while ago Bishop Gomez from Bangladesh, who works with very, very poor communities. And he told me, look, Bernd, my people in my community, they contribute heavily to the wealth your people in your country here in Europe are experiencing. Because we all know that the resources, the food resources, but also other natural resources we are exploiting for our wealth are limited. And so we all know also that not everybody in the world could have an as high living standard as, for example, Europeans, as people in industrialized countries have today. And this is a major injustice, that a few people live in a relatively richdom while others are living in extreme poverty. And here the church, from my point of view, really comes into play to again and again highlight this injustice and to call for changes also in the individual life of everybody of us, particularly those who are benefiting from the system today. I know that it's difficult for an individual to imagine what he and she could change to the benefit of poor people living far away. But in fact, it makes a big difference if I buy, for example, flowers from Kenya, where people at the same time are facing hunger and the land is taken by for flower production for the export market, or if I buy regional products. It makes a big difference when I go to a little supermarket in my little village and if I buy the apples from my own region or if I buy the apples from overseas from the global food market. So everybody can make everyday changes and the church, I think, can give here key guidance also to people to reach changes in their individual life, but also to governments to really come to strong decisions which really help. We cannot leave these. We cannot let these governments go away after so many years of seeing so many people starving around the world. And you know, we have exceeded beyond 1 billion people starving in the world. And this is, we call, as Sitze, we call today, a crisis of civilization. And this is something the church can address.
My thanks there to Bernd Nieles, Secretary General of CIDSE, the International Alliance of Catholic Development Agencies working for global justice. And that's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English Programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow if you can, or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. You're listening to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.